Repair Show, starring Jim Bezga. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Bezga's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Sorry, I had to finish that drum fill there. I do it all here at the Culture Repair Show. Happy Sunday to you. This is your host, Jim Babka, 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email me at comments, that's comments with an S, plural, at downsizedc.org. That's my email address. Downsizedc.org is my day job, along with the Downsize DC Foundation. And I just got back from a trip. You know, if you were listening to last week's show, you know that we taped that show early. I was thrilled to finally have our major sponsor, on the show, Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America, to be able to talk about what they're doing over at Gun Owners of America. We're going to have a GOA update coming up here in the next segment or two. But as we close out this September, I want to kind of dedicate this show to downsizedc.org because, folks, I haven't been able to follow the news the way I wanted to this week. I was up on Capitol Hill. I was in Fantasyland, Disneyland of the Potomac, some call it. Just having an incredible set of meetings to try to promote the Read the Bills Act. Now, if you're new to the show or you're not familiar with what downsizedc.org is doing, the Read the Bills Act is the signature piece of legislation, the signature campaign of downsizedc.org. Now, the Read the Bills Act calls for Congress to do some very simple things. You may be shocked to learn that Congress passes laws that they have never read. And they not only do this occasionally, they do this routinely. Most of the people up on Capitol Hill are attorneys, and they understand very well the concepts of fiduciary responsibility and power of attorney. Fiduciary responsibility means if you've been chosen to do something and you're being paid for the service, that you have a responsibility to do it properly and thoroughly, representing the customer or consumer that you are serving. The power of attorney goes one step further. It says that the concept there is that if you are signing documents on behalf of another person, you have a responsibility not only to have read the document, but to be familiar with its contents. Failure to do so could cost you your license to practice law. That's what power of attorney means when an attorney takes it on. And when people are elected to Congress, though, they refuse to accept responsibility on a host of things. It's routine for them to exempt themselves from legislation that they pass that they expect you to follow. And apparently, fiduciary responsibility and power of attorney are things that they can ignore as well. So that when they pass the Patriot Act, for example, they don't actually read the bill or have a copy of the bill available, the final bill, just as it got passed into law, until after, yes, I said after the vote was passed. Or, if they're doing defense, if they're doing intelligence reorganization, and they're dealing with over 3,000 pages worth of legislation, that only two copies are available 2 hours before the vote, one for the Republican leadership, one for the Democratic leadership. And apparently we're supposed to believe that they all rushed over and with using their Evelyn Woods speed reading abilities, read the entire bill. In fact, the bigger the bill is, the less likely it seems that they read it. I've got a quote around here somewhere. Maybe I'll dig it out for the next segment from Representative Brian Baird of Washington describing just how bad the situation is. But Downsize DC is after exactly what it says. It wants to have a proposal that would actually slow the speed of government down. And so we have launched the Read the Bills Act. We have generated over 19,000 messages now to Congress. It's just the beginning. It's been entirely done by DC downsizers and word of mouth. We haven't spent a dime on advertising beyond this show and beyond another show on this network. Everything else has been word of mouth. And I've been grateful to Free Talk Live for having me on and for running an ad about the Read the Bills Act. And you hear their ads about the Read the Bills Act here on this, the Culture Repair Program. Now, the Read the Bills Act would require, first of all, that they would actually have to sit through a reading. A quorum which in the case of both the rules of the House and the Senate, is one half plus one, would have to sit through a physical reading of the bill. Now, we believe this would have the immediate effect, not only of slowing the process down dramatically, because nine out of ten things that they're doing up on the Hill, as one representative conceded to us, they shouldn't be doing constitutionally or practically. Pragmatically, they do a lot of things that are really stupid. They're involved in things they shouldn't be involved in. And so we want to slow them down, but we also believe that because they would have to sit through an entire reading of the bills would automatically get a whole lot shorter. Because who wants to sit through a bill that's that long? You want to sit through a multiple thousand page bill? The answer for most of these guys is no, they don't want to do that. They've got other things to do. And trust me, they are busy. We also would require that they sign an affidavit saying that they have actually read the bill and they understand what's in it. They're familiar with the bill. Now, this affidavit requirement only goes into effect on those who want to vote yes, those who want to vote in the affirmative. They want to spend more money or expand government power. If they're going to spend money, if they're going to give government power, they should have to read what they're authorizing. We think that's pretty basic. We think that fits in perfectly with fiduciary responsibility and power of attorney. They'd be accountable to their opponent, the watchdog groups, mainly their constituents back home. If they're questioned about the bill and they don't know what the contents are, well, then maybe they weren't honest in the signing of their affidavit. That becomes a legitimate campaign issue. Next, we have a 7-day waiting period before the bill can be passed. After the final reading of the bill is done, 7 days, a cooling off period, if you will, before they're allowed to actually vote on the legislation. This gives talk show hosts, watchdog groups, citizens themselves an opportunity to read the legislation, digest it, and decide what they want to do, give feedback to their member of Congress. It allows for more participatory democracy. There's a lot of lip service given to democracy on Capitol Hill. If they want to expand democracy, they should have a 7-day waiting period. And during those 7 days, our proposal also calls for the bill to be posted on the Internet. It's final version, final copy for everyone to see. No last-minute hijinks here. And we called for this. We are calling for this. 19,000 messages generated to Congress so far. And this week, this past week, we took the next step in that journey. And we went up to Capitol Hill and made some appointments, and we took some constituents with us. We had with us Walt Augustinowicz of Florida, Kent White of Florida, Jim Marquardt of Indiana, David Page of Maryland. And we had some great appointments. I'm going to share with you these appointments. I'm going to talk to you about exactly what happened. I'm going to share with you my favorite story. I'm going to talk about who was most prepared and who may be a kind of odd potential here. I'm going to talk about a hallway meeting. I'm going to talk about my most frustrating two meetings. And share with you, kind of give you a report on how things went. Now, we're going to be reporting all of this in the Downsizer Dispatch this week, hopefully Tuesday. But I have to tell you, I haven't even had a chance to get to it because it's been go, go, go from the moment I pulled in here. We've got a lot going on at the foundation and the organization. There's a whole bunch to do. And after I got back from the trip, I just have been just deluged with these items. And so I have not had a chance to sit down and write this yet. So you on the air are getting the first chance to hear my public report about my visit to Washington, D.C., and I was pleased to be joined by those other folks. If we have time, we'll talk about the Bush proposal. I didn't have a chance to do this last week. We taped the show with Larry. But Franklin Delano Bush is looking to massively expand the power and size of government once again to address all problems. And the media loves it. The New Deal is back. We'll talk about that as well. 1-800-259-9231. I urge you to get in right now. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it. I didn't approve it. I wasn't even consulted." If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Morning, that's the last of the hour on the Genesis Communications Network. 1-800-259-9231 is the phone number. Or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org and put your sharp stick in the eye. If I have time, I will discuss why price gouging doesn't exist. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to that at all today or not, but price gouging does not exist. And, you know, we had to sit, you know, one of the meetings we went to was a constituent coffee with Senator Ben Nelson of Florida, and he's taking the lead. He's fighting hard to make sure that there isn't price gouging, particularly by the oil companies. What a good man he is. Unfortunately, price gouging doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist, folks. I'll be happy to take you on that topic if you disagree with me. 1-800-259-9231 or email me at comments@downsizedc.org. Now, I wanted to tell you about the meetings that we had at Capitol Hill, and I'll start off by sharing with you our first meeting, which happened to be my favorite story in the whole trip. We had Walt Augustinowicz was from Florida, was one of the people participating, and Walt is an absolute firecracker. He's a senior vice president for an insurance firm. In other words, he sells insurance, and he knows how to close, and he knows how to market, and he's fearless about making phone calls and doing what he needed to do to get appointments. So Walt got on, and he got appointments with us for both of his senators, the aforementioned Ben Nelson and the Senator's office, Mel Martinez. We met with an aide, Brian Walsh, who I'll get to in just a second. And we also met with the chief of staff for his congressperson, Catherine Harris, who will be running for U.S. Senate more than likely in 2006 against the aforementioned Ben Nelson. And so he got these appointments, but he didn't stop there. He also got on the phone and he called some media contacts he had. He's from the Sarasota area, and he ended up getting coverage on the front page of the Sarasota paper and in seven other editions around Sarasota, a story written. In fact, I got interviewed for the story as well about the Read the Bills Act, but it was about his trip to D.C., and we're going to recommend that everybody that comes to D.C. with me on future trips makes a call to their local media, because the local media found it to be a human interest story. Local person goes to Washington asking for something. I mean, they're used to reporting on this stuff all the time. So, of course, what we were asking for was a little different. We were asking for less government as opposed to more. We were asking for more restraint on Congress as opposed to Congress having more power or authority to do something to help our industry or our special interest. But it was a very savvy move on Walt's part, and he was in this meeting with Brian Walsh, who is a legislative aide to Senator Mel Martinez, Republican of Florida. Now, the meeting was very interesting. Walt let it out very early that he had been interviewed, and gave a copy of the paper to Mr. Walsh so that he could look and see that, you know, indeed a story had been done about this back home. And we proceeded to have a short meeting, a group of us around a table. And initially, Mr. Walsh was very, very down on our idea. Just said, look, this isn't going to work. He said, you know, when he hears our idea and our complaint, he was reminded of the Winston Churchill quote, "It's the worst system in the world except for everything else." And so he thought, you know, this isn't really going to do much. This is not really necessary. You know, sure, things aren't perfect. They could be done better, but this is overkill. Well, after a while and after some more conversation, Mr. Walsh got himself kind of worked up. He pointed out how the Katrina funding was being handled. All this money's being sent, you know, first $10 billion, then $53 billion, and now they're talking about another $100 billion in the next 30 to 45 days. And he said there is an incredible rush to do something here, just to do anything. Not necessarily what needs to be done, what should be done. No inspection, no dialogue, no pausing, no deliberation. We just got a rush to do something. He said, we really could use a bill like yours. Well, we kind of perked up at that. We thought, well, maybe we're starting to win him over in this conversation. But then once he realized where he was at, he started to back up a little bit, and he said, you know what, I really admire you guys, and you're doing, you know, I know what you're trying to do here, and yes, you know, we do need some restraint and so forth, but you'll never get it done. This will never happen. Well, Walt Augustinowicz, ever the closer, as we're wrapping up the meeting, says, you know, I'm not really sure what happened here. I don't know what's going on. He said, I want to make sure I understand this completely, because when I go back, I'm getting interviewed by these reporters, and I would like to be able to explain to them what happened at meeting. What should I tell them? Well, you know how sometimes people say that then the person straightened up? Well, Brian Walsh literally straightened up in his chair. A smile came across his face as if he was being interviewed by a TV camera right there. And he said, you tell the reporters that you had a successful meeting with the senator. He's very interested in your proposal and will take it into consideration. I hope you're laughing right now, because I had to do everything I could to keep from laughing right there on the spot. You know, we got him with this, folks. It's just a matter of how much pressure we can put on. It's a matter of how much advertising we can do, how much work we can get done in putting this idea in front of people on the Hill on a consistent basis, what other groups maybe we could get to ally with us. We need to have a strategy that goes forward on this. We're going to begin outlining the strategy in the coming weeks, how we can begin to intensify the pressure on this. But Brian Walsh, despite his vociferous opposition at the outset, came away saying, tell them that we're giving this serious consideration. They know that they have to tell the folks back home that they support the Read the Bills Act. Now, we also met with Senator Lugar's office. There's not much that's going to happen there. But we had a great meeting with Bill Van Horn, who works in Representative Ben Cardin's office. Bill Van Horn was very, very prepared for us. He read our proposal. He understood what we were doing. He was not blowing us off in the least. In fact, he gave us all kinds of interesting and good advice. And said that, you know, his boss actually has an interest in what's called a single subject rule. Now, this is a Democrat. You know, Democrats have this reputation that they just want to spend, spend, spend. If I have time, we'll get to how Bush is spending. But, you know, they have this reputation that that's all they want to do. And he would actually like to see a single subject rule, which means that when a bill's introduced, it can only cover one topic. And we're actually, if that has some kind of teeth, we're actually very interested in it. Now, as we understand, Representative Cardin only likes to sponsor bills either involving the committee he's in or on a bipartisan, reaching across the aisle kind of basis, particularly because he's in the minority party. As I said, we met with the chief of staff for Catherine Harris's office. And, you know, he kind of brushed us off, said, your proposal's commendable, but, you know, some people think things don't get done fast enough around here, and size has nothing to do with how much, size, number of pages in a bill has nothing to do with how big the spending's going to be. You could spend a lot of money in very few sentences, and he's got a point. I don't want anybody to think that the Read the Bills Act is something that is going to solve every problem that's ever happened in Washington, D.C. It's not. It's a simple step one. And in fact, we already have our step two planned on this, and we are looking into a proposal for a signature campaign to add on top for next year that will deal with yet another component of how government spends money. What we believe needs to happen here is we need to change the rules of the game. If you control the rules of the game, you can control the outcome of the contest 9 times out of 10 or more. And so we want to control the rules of the game. Step one is to slow these guys down as much as we possibly can and make sure that watchdog groups and people, interested citizens, talk show hosts, etc., can monitor them before they cast critical votes. They can't sneak things through in the middle of the night. They can't pull fast ones past us. They can't hold off on scheduling a vote and then schedule it at the drop of a hat so that people can't mount opposition. But when we come back, I'll continue to talk about my trip. And we need to get to the GOA update, because there's a critical vote coming up in the House. And already, those slippery congressmen have started to back off on their earlier promises to the gun owners organization. So 1-800-259-9231 or comments at downsizedc.org. If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention. The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, to permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws. That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog, or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
I gotta reach over and grab something here. Alright. Because I want to tell you about my most irritating appointment on Capitol Hill. We met with a congressman who, on the way out the door, handed us cards. And the cards had a list of principles on it. There are six of them. I'm only going to share with you the first four because they're directly relevant to our proposal. Number one, less government. Number two, lower taxes. Number three, personal responsibility. And number four, individual freedom. These are the first four standards by which this particular representative judges any legislation that he's going to consider endorsing, co-sponsoring, voting for, or even sponsoring, originating. These are the four standards that he uses. And we had Kent White along with us, and we were talking to his congressman, Tom Feeney, who works in the NASA district in Florida. In fact, as we were exiting the meeting, we were rushed out, as a matter of fact, because the shuttle astronauts were literally in his lobby. And we went past them on the way out, and some of us shook hands with them. And it was Kent White's congressman. And Kent was very, very excited about this meeting. Kent was ecstatic. He said, look, if there's anybody on this trip who is going to be interested in what we got to propose, it's Tom Feeney. This guy is a solid, you know, fiscal conservative, believes in less government. And here it is, number one, he believes in less government. I mean, the specific question he asks himself is, does the bill tend to reduce government regulation, size of government, or eliminate entitlements or unnecessary programs? So surely he's going to be for the Read the Bills Act. And even in the meeting, he conceded that 9 out of 10 things that they passed shouldn't get passed. They're wrong. They're wasteful. They're inefficient. They're unconstitutional. You pick, take your pick. Maybe all of the above. And he conceded this in the appointment. Now, Mr. Feeney did almost the entire conversation. He monopolized it. And he continued to tell us how conservative he was. In fact, he wanted us to know that he liked the cooling off period in our proposal, the 7-day waiting period. That's pretty neat. And the posting the bill on the line, that seems like a neat thing. Maybe not 7 days, but, you know, something along those lines. We were on the right track with that. But the bill overall was a mistake. He wanted us instead to support the Family Budget Defense Act. Now, this is the Republican attempt with smoke and mirrors to put 11 proposals on the table that are designed to reform how the budget is set. Now, you remember I said just before the break that we need to change the rules. Well, the Republicans, there's a small group of Republicans, a small caucus of them, called the Republican Study Committee, that wants to change how the budget process goes. And so they put together a bill that is more than 120 pages long. It's very hard to read and get your head around. We're sitting there, we're having this meeting, and we're being told just how conservative this guy is, just how small he wants government to be, just how on our side he is, except our idea really stinks. He was willing to tell us what he thought we wanted to hear, but not willing to do what required the action required to demonstrate where his faith or his belief really lie. And so I was very aggravated, and I didn't feel like we had an adequate chance to really present to him what it was we were doing or why we were proposing it. So we're on our way out of the office. I'm the last person. And that was on purpose. And he reached out to shake my hand like he had everybody else thanking us for coming. But I didn't let go of his hand. And I said, Mr. Feeney, I've read this proposal, this budget reform proposal, over 120 pages long. He goes, yeah, well, there's 11 proposals in there. And I said, I follow this stuff, and I couldn't quite get my head around it. He goes, yeah, there's some real subtle things in there. I said, our bill, 5.5 pages. And everyone I talk to, their eyes get wide as saucers, and they get excited. In fact, The only other reaction we get is they don't read the bills. Have a nice day. Folks, there are too many people up on Capitol Hill that want you to believe they're for less government, lower taxes, personal responsibility, and individual freedom that don't mean it. I think these people are actually more dangerous than someone that's straightforward and honest with you, that they believe government works, they intend to do all kinds of things from their position, they're going to keep doing those things. But here is a conservative Republican who wanted us to think otherwise, wanted us to think that he was on our side, and he was not. Now, he's vulnerable too, because if we pour the heat on in his district, he's going to have to find a way to get behind a proposal like ours. Maybe they'll water it down or something, but he's still going to have to do it because he wants to continue to make people believe. He even wanted us to believe that he was for less government, lower taxes, personal responsibility, and individual freedom. Of course, personal responsibility, does that apply to congressmen? I don't know. We'll thumb through my notes here further. We met with, I told you we met with Senator Nelson's people. We also met with Evan Bayh's people. Not much there. They took the information. David Page stopped two senators in the hallway and handed them our paperwork as well, and one of them happened to be his senator. You say, Jim, is there any good news that comes out of this trip? And yes, there was. We had a meeting. Our very last meeting was with a freshman representative, Mike Sodrell. He's from the southern part of Indiana. And we met with him and his chief of staff, Cam Savage. And he liked what he heard. And professed to be interested and promised to read and study the proposal, but he doesn't feel that he's the right person to support this. And this was a common theme throughout the time that we were there, a real lesson that we learned, that people want to pass the buck off to somebody else. Nobody wants to be the first one to stick their head above ground, like, you know, like a whack-a-mole game. They don't want to be the first mole to pop their head out, and so they defer to the leadership. You need to get somebody more high ranking, or you need to get somebody on the committee that has some oversight on this issue. And so he basically said the same thing to us, but I still came away with a rather good feeling about that meeting, that there is genuine interest on his part. He's not ready to move yet, but there is genuine interest, and maybe this is a place where we've got a spark and we need to pour fire so we get a raging inferno. Pour gasoline, I should say, so we get a raging inferno. My other most irritating appointment was with Nathan Butzloff and his assistant Meredith, whose last name I did not get. He could not stand the reading provision, just like Congressman Feeney. He says the nature of legislation, he didn't think we understood it. He wanted to explain it to us. It's very complicated. It's very complicated. Duh, we didn't know that. And he said in a time-sensitive situation like an emergency, like Katrina, they need to act. Well, I pointed out that on December 7th, 1941, a real emergency in Pearl Harbor, first of all, the Navy was able to shoot back. And second of all, the President, particularly in this era, has 30 days to do virtually whatever he wants in response. And there is no way that Congress isn't going to declare war. That if Congress had meant to declare war a day earlier or a day later or 7 days later, wouldn't have had any effect on the outcome of World War II. None. That wasn't a good enough answer for them. And finally, Meredith says to me, she says, you don't understand, the people want us to do something. They don't care about all these distinctions. You see, because Congress is supposed to be a deliberative branch. The executive branch is supposed to be the one responding, if indeed they are to respond. And I said, you know something? I said, I'm not thinking about those people. I'm thinking about the founders who sent you here and expected you, the legislative and executive branch, to occasionally, or more frequently, butt heads. You weren't supposed to be embracing each other and agreeing on everything all the time. That's called separation of powers. With that, they threw me out of the office. 1-800-259-9231. Yes, I'm tired of senators that don't respect the Constitution. Stay tuned. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, no legislation without representation. Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizeDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizeDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
I would like to have time to get into George Bush's speech, but we do need to take care of some business here, and I very much want you to know what Gun Owners of America has for you. This show, of course, is graciously sponsored by Gun Owners of America, www.gunowners.org, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. And this is a GOA update from the homepage of the Gun Owners website, September 20th, 2005. If you remember, we've talked about this last week on the show, and we've talked about it in previous weeks as well. There is a bill in the House, H.R. 800, that is going to be coming up for consideration shortly, or at least hopefully will be coming up for consideration, that is designed to protect gun manufacturers from frivolous lawsuits. The Senate version of this bill, 397, had some terrible additions, some amendments made to it, including gun safety locks. There will be mandatory sale of gun safety locks to go with the gun. This is the first foot in the door to make gun locks mandatory for use in the home. Gun Owners of America doesn't compromise. It stands firm and has opposed this bill, but they were told, don't worry, be happy, because the House will pass the clean version. They'll go into conference committee, and this other provision will be pulled out. That was back when Larry Pratt and Gun Owners of America was opposing the addition of these amendments to S-397 and explaining to Senate Majority Leader Frist what procedures he needed to put in place in order to keep these amendments from getting in. Well, don't worry, be happy is now turning into dangerous words. Only Gun Owners of America appears to be standing up on this issue. More than 100 representatives have signed a letter asking the leadership to bring up the Senate passed version of the bill, which would negate any need for a conference committee and the proposals that would require gun locks, gun safety locks on with the sale of handguns, would pass. Now, it's getting late in the game, and they're asking you to contact Representative Marilyn Musgrave of Colorado. Now, why? She is the leader of the Second Amendment Caucus in the House, and she is the most likely person that should be approached and is likely to approach the leadership on behalf of gun owners if she's contacted by enough people. If you live in Colorado's 4th District in particular, it's especially important that you do that. Now, this is the very top link on the gun owners page. It's the latest update, gunowners.org. The title of this update is "The Jury is Still Out on Protecting Gun Makers. Please ask the House leadership to ditch the Senate's gun control." It's dated Tuesday, September 20th. I urge you to go to the gun owner's site right now and find out how you can contact Representative Musgrave, and also take the time to contact your congressman. If you don't know who that is, make sure you're registered over at DownsizeDC.org, because when you register there, the system tells you who your representative and two senators are. We've got to do what we can to get H.R. 800 passed to stop these frivolous lawsuits, often motivated by politically hungry municipal politicians. Well, this has been a GOA update brought to you by the sponsors of the show, Gun Owners America. Gunowners.org is the website. I encourage you to check them out and join them. I'm really concerned about the things that were proposed. I'm just going back to this meeting I had with Nathan Butzloff. Nathan Butzloff is a chief legislative aide, I didn't mention this earlier, in Senator Lisa Murkowski's office. Lisa Murkowski is a senator from Alaska. And his anger with me, them throwing me out, them getting upset because I was telling them about constitutional divisions, just was really interesting to me. They just were insistent that they needed to be able to do something. Well, this news came out a couple weeks ago, and this is it just seems like an appropriate time to report this, but there is there is flagrant abuse of 9/11 business loans that were offered as relief from the September 11th attacks to help businesses and people affected by the September 11th attacks. Senator Olympia Snow of Maine, chairwoman of the Senate Small Business and Entrepreneurship Committee, announced an investigation in response to an Associated Press article that showed the federal program was so loosely managed that it gave low-interest loans to companies that didn't need terrorism relief or even knew they were getting it. Quote, the apparent widespread abuse of loans provided through the Supplemental Terrorist Activity Relief Act is nothing short of an outrage, Snow said. Now, what happened was they had people as far away as Kansas opening up fast food joints with this money, people who were not affected in the least by September 11th. And then Olympia Snow, or John Kerry, who's also quoted in this piece by the Associated Press, can come out and pretend to be outraged. I am outraged that this would happen. In Senator Foghorn Leghorn style. If they had to read the bills, they would have known that such a flaw existed in the bill and that it could have been exploited. But they don't have to read the bills. And they shove everything they can in there. And then later, when government fails, they pretend to be the savior. Folks, government, I got news for you. Government is wildly successful. It constantly fails and then manages to fund itself. As a result, it gets more money, more power to itself to solve the problems that government created, that politicians created. The politicians stand to benefit. I have one more question for Mr. Nathan Busloff. He's talking about we've got to do something. I don't know who this we is that he's talking about. The taxpayers are the ones that are ultimately going to foot the bill. I want to know why congressmen don't share in the sacrifice. Why they don't give up the pork that goes back to their district. Why we have to have increased deficits or greater printing to the money supply that lead to inflation or greater borrowing or higher taxes. Why aren't they giving up their pork programs? Why aren't they patriotic enough? Why aren't they compassionate enough to give up those programs to help the people in need? You're listening to the Culture Repair Show on the Genesis Communications Network.
Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org. Or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Really digest and break down the president's speech of last week. You know, one of the most horrifying moments of the entire affair. You know, the president goes down and he gives his speech, and they light up the route for him and the buildings, and then he leaves town and the lights go out again. And as he's there, after he leaves, I happen to be watching coverage on NBC, and Brian Williams interviewing Tim Russert. And I'm going to re-nickname him Timmy Russer because I was just amazed. He bounced up and down like a schoolboy. Just giddy. Just so excited. He's like, this is going to be the New Deal all over again. This is going to be like Franklin Roosevelt and all those programs that were helped design to fight the Depression. We're all going to unite together as Americans. This is going to be the first American city of the 21st century. This is just exciting. This is going to bring the country together. I mean, he was just going crazy. And the rest of the media has gone crazy. They love, the media loves the Franklin Delano Bush. And Bush is spending money like mad. Like mad. His total inflation adjusted discretionary spending, so this is non-defense spending, 35.1%. Now, to put that in context, Lyndon Baines Johnson, of Great Society and Vietnam War fame, only had 33.4% boost in discretionary spending, and that 35.1% was from the American Enterprise Institute, who is very friendly and very favorable to the Bush administration, and they admitted the number is conservative. It's based on mid-year reporting. The end of the 2005-year budget will almost certainly adjust that number higher. By way of comparison, Bill Clinton spent 8%. Bill Clinton's discretionary spending actually went down by 8% in his first term. Folks, this is the idea that the Republicans are fiscally conservative and the Democrats are just, you know, wantonly liberal is just a myth. I mean, both of them want the same thing. They both want more and bigger government. Finally, I don't have enough time to analyze that, but I did want to get this in about the Red Cross. I thought it was really interesting. First of all, they keep asking people to send cash. I heard George Bush the Elder, I heard Bill Clinton use the word cash. Now, I work for a nonprofit organization. We raise money all the time. DownsizeDC.org, very worthy cause. When we solicit funds, we never say send cash. We say send a donation, make a contribution, please make a generous gift, please pledge. We don't ever say the word cash. And I'm not used to hearing politicians utter the word cash. But everybody lined up to support the institutional Red Cross. It's establishment subsidized. And they came on and they said, you know what, stop sending stuff. We can't afford the transportation costs. Send cash. They said this right here on one of our local radio shows. There's a whole bunch of sordid stuff on there. I know Alex Jones has talked about the Red Cross on his show. And I would encourage you even to go to his site, Infowars.com, and look up, maybe do a Google search on that, Red Cross. Well, we're continuing to deal with the issues that are coming up as a result of Katrina and now Rita. In fact, I had something to say about Rita here as well, but I've only got an hour. So I want you to go to DownsizeDC.org this week, participate in our campaigns there, and visit my blog, which will be back up and running now that I'm back from my trip to Washington, JimBabka.com, B-A-B-K-A, JimBabka.com. Check those two sites out to stay up to date, as well as DownsizeDC.com, where we're telling good news of people doing great things. See you next week.